Don't be a drag, just be a queen. Whether you're broke or evergreen, you're black, white, beige, Chola descent, you're Lebanese, you're Orient. Whether life's disabilities left you outcast for leader teased, rejoice and love yourself today, cause baby, you were born this
no
way.
No matter gay, straight or bi, lesbian, transgender life, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born to survive. No matter black, white, or beige.
Get out those silver hot pants, spruce up that wig and splash on some glitter. Yes, gay pride is hitting the streets of Berlin. So this week we are asking, what's it like being gay in Germany? Just how progressive is the country when it comes to LGBT rights? I'm Damian McGuinness, and round the Stammtisch table this week, we have pretty much every sexual preference going. So I think we can safely say we have all those letters covered and more besides. Prepared to get down to the nearest disco glitter ball is my co-host, Berlin Bureau Chief of The Economist, Jeremy Cliff. So, Jeremy, are we going to see you on a float at Gay Pride wearing a big feather boa?
You never know. I've got family visiting this weekend and they want to do something typically Berlin. So to be honest, I can't think of anything more appropriate than Pride.
Good. I think you could rock it. There are not many Economist Bureau Chiefs who could pull that off.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
Also joining us this week is Manuela Kay, who is editor-in-chief of the German lesbian magazine Elmag. She's made films, written numerous books, including Come Better. I think you can guess what that's about. Now, for you, Manuela, the big event of Gay Pride this week is the day before the Pride March.
That's right. It's Dyke March. Dyke Day on Friday before Pride, yeah.
Dykes on bikes.
True, yeah.
Good.
Also. Mm-hmm.
What happens there?
It's important because in all these letters, LGBTQI, whatever comes, the L is the first letter, but it's still often overseen and not represented enough.
Kay is also here this week, looking impressively fabulous for so early in the morning. Kay is editor at the Berlin queer magazine Siegesäule and is a trans activist and performer. So, Kay, are you doing Pride March or Dykes on Bikes or both?
I'm going to do the Pride March. I'm going to visit the Dyke March because I live around the corner. But I'm going to wear a big wig the next day, so I have to keep some energy up.
Oh, that's true. You don't want to peak too early, do you?
Yeah.
Okay, in a minute, we're going to talk in a lot more detail about lesbian visibility or the lack of it. Ask what gay identity means in Germany today. Just a quick note before we start on terminology. I should really say LGBTQI and maybe a few other letters after that too. But for the purposes of this show, I'll often just say LGBT or just plain old-fashioned gay. Very briefly, though, let's touch on the news this week in Germany. Jeremy, there was one huge story which has been dominating the German media this week. What was it?
This was the resignation of, what's his first name?
Mesut Özil.
I knew it was Özil, I didn't know it was Mesut.
It's football, that's the lesbian.
Sorry, that wasn't very good, was it? This podcast is usually a platform for me to highlight my ignorance about football, so in keeping with that tradition, I've just shown myself up yet again. Mesut Özil, I did know his surname, I didn't know the first name, who I hear is a football player, among other things, but in all seriousness, a very significant figure in the German national football team who played for Germany during the World Cup and who resigned from the football team citing racism. This was because, particularly after he took a photo with Erdogan, the Turkish president, he's been under pressure from particularly the political right with questions over whether he truly belongs to Germany, whether he is truly loyal to Germany.
The photograph originally, which was taken in May, was very controversial, but the scandal really kicked off again after Germany lost the World Cup in Russia,
exactly.
Didn't it?
It came to a peak in the last couple of weeks after Germany crashed out unexpectedly early of the World Cup, and there were figures on the right who said without Özil, the football team would have won.
And even worse, one of the football managers of the national squad.
Grindel, the head of the...
essentially blamed German, Özil for the loss, didn't he?
Exactly, the head of the German FA, and he was highlighted in Özil's letter announcing his withdrawal. So this has really shaken up Germany and begged a lot of questions about how multicultural Germany is, how well integrated people, for example, of Turkish descent can really be in the country, because Özil had been this great figure of a new, more colourful, more diverse Germany. The fact that he could, as a Turkish German, and succeed in the football team. His photo was taken with Merkel shaking her hand when Germany won the last World Cup in 2014. And then suddenly for him to say that he didn't see a place for himself on the national team has caused a sort of bout of national soul searching. And some really pretty nasty commentary. I mean, it's been striking, I think, how the right-wing Bild-Zeitung, which is a tabloid newspaper, the most read in Germany, has gone after him in this very personal way. And you can debate whether or not it was politically sensible for him to take that photo with Erdogan. I would suggest possibly not. But Özil himself said, I'm a of Turkish roots. That's not something I hide, and I was just recognizing those roots. In any case, whatever you think of that, the commentary that followed that and the commentary that followed the World Cup defeat has been really nasty, and I think it's going to be difficult for Germany to get over this.
And he said, when I win, I'm German. When I lose, I'm an immigrant.
Yeah.
The whole German team played really bad, and that's hard to take in for Germans. They're not good in losing, and so they need to blame someone. And then here racism kicks in, and I think there's a lot of racism in sports, just like there is misogyny. But on the other hand, it pisses me off personally was that he meets with this guy Erdogan, no matter what, whose president he is.
Who is seen as authoritarian.
Because yes,
that was a political gesture, essentially,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, it was supporting a politician that is slowly building up some kind of non-democratic state. Yeah. And that has nothing to do with anybody's nationality, but just with the political side. And that was the huge scandal for me, actually.
But
Germany is not reacting about the political statement, but about the heritage of these people, which doesn't matter to me at all.
Yeah. He could have used the opportunity to raise human rights concerns, at least to sort of to use his platform to criticize anyone.
He could have supported the opposition in Turkey.
But then people would say he's a young footballer, not a politician.
Yeah, but then he should meet with the president and has his photo taken, you know.
Right, so let's get back to our main topic this week, LGBT life in Germany. Now, our big question is gay identity just about camp, disco divas and glitter balls, or does gay culture risk turning LGBT people into some sort of cliche? Now, someone who is making waves right now by talking about that very point is the Australian comedian Hannah Gadsby. She's the hottest thing in comedy right now. I only know about her, frankly, because producer Max, who is the cool one in this office, told me to watch her. So, who can tell me about Hannah Gadsby?
Well, I've seen the special already. In the end, she stops doing comedy. It's funny that you mentioned that she's one of the hottest. I mean, the term hot for a woman doing comedy is also questionable. Comedian, because her stand-up is about quitting comedy because it's somehow self-destructive for her. It starts up with really comedy bits, but then it turns into like a really honest statement from her.
Because she's saying the comedy that she's used to doing about coming out as a lesbian, about gay life, is essentially self-destructive.
She says that the comedy she used was self-destructive for her. So she was making constantly jokes about her, and she realized that she is really talking bad about herself, and that's something you should not do if you are in the spotlight.
It's cleverly done because she starts off by making light of it all. As you say, she jokes around about it. And then later on in the skit, she comes back to the things she's made the audience laugh about and makes them realise how unfunny they really are. So she makes this joke towards the start about her coming from Tasmania, which is a very conservative island off Australia. And she says, oh, everyone there's, you know, they sleep with their cousins and they, you know, it wasn't a great place to grow up a gay. And then she comes back to that and she says, you know, these people hated me, you know, this is Bible Belt, it was miserable growing up there, it was the people with whom I grew up couldn't accept me, and she kind of brings out the sadness of it. And her point is that comedy, you create a tension and then dissolve it with humour, but sometimes things shouldn't be dissolved, they should be confronted.
Let's listen then to a bit of the beginning of the stand-up show, Nanette. In this clip she talks about how much visibility lesbians had in society when she was growing up in provincial Australia.
But in all the debate about homosexuality, no one ever really talked about the lesbians. Do you know? Like, it's all the gay men. They're the problem. Anal sex, that's when the devil will get you. But lesbians, they're like, no. What even are they? What they do they, really? Do they even exist if no one's watching, really? No harm in a cuddle. You know, for a long time I knew more facts about unicorns than I did about lesbians.
So why is it then that traditionally it's gay men that get all the attention and lesbians get ignored in society?
Well, it's quite simple. We live in patriarchy and men are just more important. They're first-class citizens everywhere and women are second-class. Gay men are third class, lesbians are fourth class.
And then comes all the rest.
You cannot blame it on the evil gay men that take up all the space. It's also the education of women that makes them you know, silent from the very beginning in their childhood, and lesbians are brought up as girls in most cases, and so they learn at a very early age to behave as women, meaning being introverted, silent and silenced. It's an everyday fight, actually, to be out there and to be visible and to be taken seriously by the rest of the world.
Of course, also the trans community fights a lot for visibility, but we are still the T in the LGBT community, and we also often fall from the table. So it's also a fight for us to get our opinions out. We are at a point right now in the queer community in Berlin where we especially talk about inclusiveness. I mean, we brought up the issue of racism, and we also have, that's a big issue in the community too, and we're starting to talk about how inclusive is this community really.
I'm going to play you another favorite bit of Hannah Gadsby's comedy show. And in this clip, while we're talking about marches, Hannah talks about her feelings when she watched Gay Pride on TV for the first time while she was back in rural Australia.
They're busy, aren't they? Oh, don't they love to dance and party? I used to sit there and watch it and go, where do the quiet gays go? Where are the quiet gays supposed to go? I still do. I just like, the pressure on my people to express our identity and pride through the metaphor of party is very intense. And don't get me wrong, I love the spectacle. I really do, but I've never felt compelled to get amongst it. Do you know, I'm a quiet soul. My favourite sound in the whole world is the sound of a teacup finding its place on a saucer. Oh, it's very, very difficult to flaunt that lifestyle in a parade.
Let's answer that question then. Where do the quiet gays go?
To get pride. You don't have to be quiet all year in order to be a quiet person, you know. Once a while you can get loud.
I think it's also like a misconception that it's still this kind of like party thing. I think there are many people who are more quiet people. Maybe they stand aside and watch it and don't dance in hot pants on some floats or something. I think it's really the idea of visibility is not only going on street and dancing. I mean, you can do so many things now via social media to be visible. You can be quiet and write things. You can direct things. You can find so many ways to be visible and not dance in hot pants on a float. But I think it's always a little bit weird that it's so judgmental to judge people who take this opportunity to go on street and be visible. And of course, there are many people who only do it once a year. And it's a big discussion, especially also for the trans community, because we are visible all year. And of course, it's different to do it in your day-to-day life compared to dancing on a parade. So it's always a mixed feeling. But I also think, you know, you just have to get your ass up and go out and do something for your community and for the world to change in the end.
One problem, however, is that I personally know a lot of people who don't go to Pride anymore because they feel strange there. They feel as guests because it's a lot of tourists, a lot of straight tourists taking over. So we have a problem. If you are too successful and too popular, you lose your identity in a way and you lose your unique style. So
because
that's
gay culture becomes appropriated by mainstream society, essentially.
And that is gay male culture only, because it's still not cool being lesbian. And nobody says, oh, it's so cool to celebrate with the lesbians. They all look so good. They listen to the best music. They wear the trendiest clothes. They have the hottest bodies. You will never hear that about lesbians. You will never hear that about trans people unless they're really flamboyant and look again like drag queens.
So it's a certain part of gay culture which mainstream society is thinking of.
Yeah.
Do you think the march has been depoliticized?
Totally, yeah. Yeah. But how political can one event be that is attended by 300,000 people? I mean, It's a big problem. It's easier to have one political message with just 1,000 people marching. But if you have, you know, you have nowadays, you have all parties marching and all different embassies and from Deutsche Bank to Ryanair. How political can an event with that be?
The AfD, the far right party, wanted to have a stand at the march. And I
think
they were told no.
That was luckily forbidden, yeah.
But I think it goes to prove your point, actually, how diffuse it has become.
Yeah, but the Pride organizers try to bring politics back in, but it's really difficult.
So what is gay culture then? Can we talk about gay culture even?
Who, if not we, should criticize and monitor that majority and correct it or fight it or change it? And that is, for me, gay culture.
So it's about more than just listening to Kylie Madonna or Melissa Etheridge.
Surely, yes.
Hopefully.
You mentioned the AfD, Jeremy, the far-right anti-migrant party, and them wanting to have a stand at Gay Pride. Can you be conservative and gay? Because traditionally it seems quite a progressive identity, almost left-wing.
One of these AfD co-leaders is a lesbian, Alice Weidel.
That's right.
Oh, I feared for that question. It's not my fault. Ever since Alice Weidel came up, all lesbians have to excuse themselves for her. You know, it's not always easy to be a lesbian, and sometimes you can, you know, move in the wrong direction. That happens.
I mean, this idea of like being gay and being like open to everything and not being racist, not being sexist, that's non-existent in the end. So, of course, you can be gay and very conservative, and there are many gay people that think we have a migrant problem, who are racist forward. Of course, this idea of I'm a white German and I don't want to share my power anymore.
But there's an interesting trend, this is, I think speaks to the point about Alice Weidel, around the radical right in Europe, that parties like the AfD and the Front National in France have started trying to, some would say quite cynically, appeal to gay voters on the back of the perceived or real homophobia of Muslim immigrants. And so Marine Le Pen in France made a big pitch for gay votes on the back of this. Don't vote for Macron, he's going to let in Muslims who hate you and don't think you should have your free rights. It's an interesting development. I don't know how successful they're being. I haven't seen figures on the proportion of gay voters in Germany, for example, who vote AfD. But it's it goes to show that it's, you know, it intersects with questions of racism and sexism and all sorts of other.
So is there a new gay conservative movement?
Unfortunately, it's not even new. You know, we had gay Nazis in the 30s. The non-out people, so they had the best disguise they could have was, you know, being a Nazi or be in a right-wing or conservative or church surrounding. And nowadays, especially gay men, are not as threatening to society anymore. They marry, they get children, so they just behave and assimilate with...
So you can be a good gay.
Yeah. I think gay marriage is the big strike back of
setback for
yeah. If you think
rights.
of the straight majority, see them as Borg from Star Trek, and so the gays are just being assimilated, and the resistance is futile, you know, because there's all these privileges that you suddenly get when you marry, and people like you, and the state accepts you.
So you've been bought by society.
Yeah, and so they are verführt. What's the word?
Seduced.
Yeah, they are seduced to be part of the big society, and so they lose all their interest in protesting it or fighting it, and that is a big problem. They are assimilated. And
so would you rather not have equal marriage, same-sex
yes,
marriage?
Yes, totally. I would rather not have marriage at all for nobody.
Yeah,
and
me too.
Yeah.
Jeremy, do you agree?
Well, actually, I was just thinking, I mean, I'm a very strong supporter of equal marriage, but I do see your point. It's interesting that the way that gay marriage has been presented by the centre-right, and it's interesting that sometimes it's under centre-right administrations in various countries, including Germany, that it's been brought in. You look at the way that Angela Merkel defends her decision, or the way that, for example, David Cameron in Britain, Conservative Prime Minister, brought it in. The language is very much about, inverted commas, normalising gay relationships. So it's about, you know, Cameron remember saying, oh, there's a conservative case for equal marriage because as conservatives we like people who settle down and have children and
very
live
pro-family, isn't it?
Exactly, sort of live
a
kind of respectable
family.
Bourgeois lives.
And it's something they know, you know, they know how to deal with. So,
right. So
they
I see
know
your point.
What to count
it,
on.
Maybe it is a bit of a sort of stratification of gay couples. That said, I am a very strong supporter of it, but I take your point.
So in general, we think of Germany as being pretty progressive when it comes to LGBT rights, but let's find out if that's really the case. Now, to do that, we're going to have a little quiz. We like to have the occasional pub quiz at our weekly Stammtisch. And this week, we'll do a little true or false quiz about gay rights in Germany. The winner is whoever can say true or false quickest, because some of these you will know. And if you get the correct answer, you will hear this sound. Which we thought was quite a good sort of gay rights sound. Don't know why, but...
Well, sounds like a fairy. Yeah.
I know.
The unicorns are big.
Undermining ourselves there yet again. Okay, first question. An easy one, which I think you guys will all know. True or false? Berlin was the first city in the world to have a major gay scene.
True.
True. In fact, Schöneberg, the old gay village I mentioned, was, I think, considered the first gay village in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
20s.
So. We're too young for that. But I know there were at least 30 or 40 more lesbian bars than there are today, because today there's none, and back then there were plenty of them.
There were dozens, weren't there?
Yeah, yeah, dozens. I wish I'd been there.
Because part of that world, the early gay scene in Berlin, was documented by Christopher Isherwood in books like Goodbye to Berlin, on which the musical Cabaret was based.
Yeah, although he was heterosexualized in first the musical and later in the film.
Yeah, he didn't stay gay, but by the time he got to the movie screen, yeah, gone straight, hadn't he?
Yeah.
Right, next question. True or false? The world's first ever gay magazine was published in Germany.
True, yeah.
Very good, Manuela.
And it was, unfortunately, it was not Siegesäule.
No, it wasn't. A little bit later.
It was not Der Eigene.
It was Der Eigene.
Der Eigene, okay. Yeah, so, okay, but yeah, that was a rather right-wing thing, actually.
Yes.
So coming back to the issue of...
Absolutely. Right,
that was more like, even before the Nazis came up, it was...
It idealised the Aryan beauty, didn't it? Lots of pictures of blonde men. Do you know what happened to that magazine?
It was done by the Nazis.
It was. Yeah. And what happened to all the copies?
They kept it.
They did. They were all given to Ernst Röhm, who was a leading gay Nazi. Quite a pragmatic solution, that. True or false, West Germany stopped prosecuting homosexual acts before East Germany?
False.
Yeah, I'd say false.
Very good. You're steaming ahead there, Manuela. Very impressive. It's a bit early in the morning for all these historical questions.
It's really very complicated, because in 1969, the paragraph 175 in West Germany was... changed, but not abandoned.
So homosexual acts were still illegal until the mid-90s?
Not all of them. The age of consent was different for straight and for gay sex between...
But there was still criminalisation of certain homosexual acts right until the mid-90s. But in 1969, in West Germany, they stopped prosecuting most.
Most, yeah.
Okay, right. anyone know when they stopped in East Germany?
It's too early.
It is too early.
I should
actually
know.
Just the year before, 1968. Yeah. A trick question.
Yeah.
Okay, true or false? Viewers of West German TV have never seen a gay kiss on mainstream public television.
False. You mean to this day?
I'll repeat the question.
West German
viewers
TV.
Of West German.
Oh, true.
TV, yeah, true.
The famous Lindenstraße kiss.
Okay, tell us about that.
So we're talking pre-reunification.
We're talking pre-reunification. Right. Bit of a trick question.
That was in the famous series Lindenstraße, and I'm just as we speak, literally, I'm just reading the autobiography of Georg Uecker, who was the one kisser that kiss made him famous forever.
That's right. It was in 1990, so after the Berlin Wall came down. Okay, next question. True or false? Jeremy K, you're going to have to speed up here. Manuela is streaking ahead. True or false? Germany was one of the first European countries to legalise same-sex marriage.
False.
Okay, that was your... Yeah.
That was a tie.
That was a tie, yeah.
I think Netherlands and Denmark, right?
It was 16 years ahead of Germany, the Netherlands. It came in Germany on the 1st of October last year.
Which would surprise a lot of people internationally, wouldn't it? Because people think of Germany as being quite liberal, as we've said, being quite innovative, progressive on gay rights traditionally. But then very late on same-sex marriage.
A lot of my readers outside of Germany were very surprised by that fact, particularly given the last few years Merkel has, rightly or wrongly, become seen as this kind of liberal hero, the anti-Trump, the refugee chancellor. And then to find out that she dragged her feet on gay marriage, and then even when she allowed the vote in the Bundestag, herself voted against it, really pushed against that image of Merkel as the great liberal hero.
Yeah. Which leads us on to the next question. True or false, same-sex marriage was legalised because Angela Merkel supported equal rights for gay people?
False.
False. It happened in the street. It happened in the strangest way. She was...
I think producer Max is loving this sound effect.
She was at a town hall event hosted by Birgitta, the women's magazine. And someone asked her, where does she stand on this issue? And she gave this rambling answer, having previously had several awkward encounters with voters who'd said, you know, why don't you support, but, you know, my right to marry, my right to adopt. And she sort of had this discussion about how she'd met this family in her constituency in northeast Germany. And it was a same-sex couple who'd brought up 8 children and they'd done a great job, and how it had challenged her perceptions because she'd always opposed gay marriage on the grounds that of child welfare. And she had seen that this wasn't necessarily the case. And through that sort of circuitous argument, which emerged seemingly by chance at this pre-election event last summer, that paved the way to a vote in the Bundestag, which endorsed it. But as I said, the Chancellor herself, along with many in her party, did not vote for it.
That proves that if Angela Merkel is not afraid of lesbians anymore, we have failed.
Yeah, what are you doing wrong?
I think she might be afraid of you, Manuela. Next question, true or false? Equal marriage means that gay couples have all the same adoption rights as straight couples.
False.
Definitely false. In what way?
It's so complicated.
I remember reading last year that under the current law, one of the parent still has to sort of identify as the father and another one still as the mother. Is that true? One of them has to become the step-parent of the child, even if they're equal parents.
Okay, well, having gone through this, I can tell you, it is complicated. In heterosexual relationships, a man becomes the legal father by marrying the mother or by simply recognising fatherhood. For non-biological parents in same-sex relationships, however, the only possibility is a difficult and bureaucratic formal adoption procedure. So that hits a lot of lesbian mothers, obviously.
Yeah.
So I think Manuela won that quiz, but you guys were not far behind.
What do I get?
It's very generous to us.
I'll buy you a drink at the Dijkmarkt. Okay, so in general then, how progressive is Germany today when it comes to LGBT rights?
Well, I mean, let's talk about the trans perspective. We have to do a lot there. We have to change the trans law. We have to find a third option in our pass, not only male or female.
In the passport.
So we don't need a gender marker in my passport. Why do I need it? Why do I have to have 2 meetings with a psychiatrist to change my name? Why can I not pay €150 and it's done? Something like this is this idea of, you know, being who you are. I can choose who I am and I don't have to fit in categories. I mean, there are so many families out there who are not married and maybe also need the same support.
Or multiple parents, more than 2 parents.
Yeah, I mean, this concept of, like, you know, of 2 people living together is like a very weird concept, and it's not even an old concept somehow. It's a new concept. Think about the Greeks.
It touches on the language as well. As it happens, I have a piece in this week's Economist on the matter of...
Not the advertiser's own journalism, but...
Well, if we're all advertising our publications, I might as well.
I've got Ziegesäule and Elmag in front of me, which exactly. I will read in a minute.
German is a very, compared with English, a very gendered language. Yeah. So, for example, when you say, if you say professor in English, you could be talking about a woman or a man. In German, you say Professorin for a woman or Professor for a man. And there's been a series of interesting debates recently about whether German can be made more respectful of the third gender, or whether you can also just be less specific if you're just talking about a person in general, you know, without wanting to say that all professors are male, for example. And the Swedish, a couple of years ago, introduced a third mm-hmm. pronoun. This idea was not taken up by the German linguistic authorities at the Duden dictionary, which is the main dictionary of record. But there is an interesting debate now going on about the gender Sternchen or the gender asterisk, which is when you say, for example, Professor in, so Professor and then an asterisk and then an in, to try and be less specific about whether you're talking about a male or a female professor. It's a particular problem for German because it is such a gendered language, but I think it shows this fault line that currently goes through German society on whether this should be a priority and how to move forward on it.
Yeah, Jeremy always makes things a bit more intellectual by bringing grammar. Anyone else? Any other problems that need to be tackled?
Well, the question of gay rights, if you see it globally, I think Germany is pretty well off. I mean, there's over 20 countries in the world where there's the death penalty for homosexuality. So compared to that, we're in paradise. However, in the European ranking, Germany is not doing so well. You can not only see rights in terms of written down, like laws or rules, you know, it's also the political profile of a society and the knowledge. And the knowledge of homosexuality in Germany is pretty, pretty poor. Just a few weeks ago, I conducted a workshop and we questioned people on the street, what comes to your mind when you hear the word lesbian? And most people were very friendly, no offense taken, but they were totally blank. And I said, nothing, I don't know. And then we asked them, do you know any lesbians? Do you know any famous lesbians? No. And then they named always the three same. Some mentioned Alice Schwarzer, others said Angela Merkel, and others...
What, because she wears trousers?
Well, she's kind of a very successful woman, and they're mostly lesbians, that's true. but that's about it. So there is no education in what does it mean to be gay or lesbian or LGBT or queer, who is it, and how do they live? That is still pretty much... not known in this country. So I think when it comes to culture, it's still very invisible in Germany. So rights are okay in terms of, you know, laws and stuff, but when it comes to the general like feeling, it's still, I think Germany is very backwards.
So it's back to Hannah Gadsby's point about knowing more about unicorns than lesbians.
Absolutely.
Well, I don't know how representative this is, but one impression I get sometimes is that the German media portrayals, insofar as they do portray LGBT people, can rely quite heavily on stereotypes that have become unpolitically correct in other countries. I mean, certainly looking at my own country, Britain, you know, there was a book out earlier this year called Ich habe nichts gegen Schwule, aber, so I've got nothing against gay people, but, by a blogger called Johannes Kramm, mm-hmm. in which he talked about the horribly nice homophobia of the middle of society, of German society. And what he was saying is that even in kind of, you know, media scene or on the sort of left liberal part of society, there are some quite old-fashioned stereotypes about what gay or lesbian people look and sound like. And he pointed to the comedian Bully Herbig, who's a sort of a very popular, makes these very sort of slapstick comedy films, but who has a habit of using very old-fashioned stereotypes of what gay people are like. So
I have to say, I always found those really offensive. Those
to
films.
Me, it feels like something out of the 1970s.
Yeah.
You know, very old school stereotypes of kind of camp and silly gay people. It's quite disrespectful, really. Anyway, so he pointed out that this is not just something on the hard right, but something that happens in the middle of society too.
So my final question is where we're going to be in 50 years' time when it comes to LGBT rights. Will we be talking about gay identity? Will we no longer need to? Where are we going to be in half a century? The despairing sigh from Manuela.
We're all going to be Borg.
Assimilated by the Straits.
Yeah, with just one mind all melted together. And I'm going to be the Borg princess, hopefully.
No, I can't
seriously.
See that. I really can't see that, Manuela.
I think as long as patriarchy will be there, we will have a problem. And patriarchy doesn't allow homosexuality to be fully equal. And we need to get rid of that first. I think, sadly, that will take longer than 50 years.
That's true. I mean, right now we are in such a tense global political situation that sometimes you think, okay, maybe everything's ripped back in a few years and we have to start over again. And I think it's not going to happen, but it's really hard to think about everything will be fine in 50 years. I think that's not the case.
At least Donald Trump and Erdogan and Putin won't live in 50 years anymore.
So that bit of the patriarchy might have gone.
Yeah.
Jeremy?
I'd second what we've already heard. I mean, one thing I'd be interested to see is whether do we make more progress on particularly trans rights feels like a new frontier at the moment. And it's something that actually I don't hear talked about so much in the media in Germany. It's become quite a big debate in the British political scene. In an optimistic moment, look back, say perhaps we will look back in 50 years or whatever, in a few generations time, and be as horrified by the way that trans people are treated and talked about now as sort of liberal opinion is about what was being done to LGBT people 30 or 50 years ago from where we are now. But maybe that's, I don't know if that's optimistic or realistic, but that's something to look out for.
Right now, there are many people who are fighting for it and kicking asses to deal with the trans laws we have in Germany. And I think it will be possible to solve that problem in 50 years. I hope so.
But you'll be kicking ass anyway in 50 years.
Yeah.
Good. So for our closing music, there is so much choice of fabulous gay anthems, we couldn't decide, so you get to choose. I have three options for you, all male singers, I'm afraid, but they are at least all gay and pretty gender fluid. So either Respect by Erasure, You Make Me Feel Mighty Real by Sylvester, I Feel Love by Jimmy Somerville. Place your votes, please.
Manuela.
My choice would clearly be Sylvester. He's one of my great heroes.
Fabulous, yeah, absolutely. Very gender fluid there.
It's interesting. Is it mean to say I feel an age gap right now? I mean, I know Sylvester and I hardly know the other ones. That's the, why I choose it.
Oh, don't pretend to be so super young. I know.
I don't buy any of that, personally. All right, give me a song. You're Sylvester, yeah?
Yeah, of course.
Jeremy?
Shall I just be Gen X to give you solidarity
on
this?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Erasure.
Yay! I have to say, I would probably, given the choice, also choose Erasure,
oh,
but
I
wouldn't take on Manuela. So that's all for this week. Thanks to Disco Queens, Max and Kate for producing. Remember, do subscribe, rate or review us on your podcast provider. If you're in Berlin this weekend, you may well see us all at some gay pride party somewhere in the city. Come and join us for a boogie. Maybe we should get a Stammtisch float going. But for now, thanks for listening and join us next week for all the latest news and gossip from a very flamboyant and tough Germany.